Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we talk about the retro 1997 journey with Sondra, and oh Jesus fuck, there is so much to talk about on this episode. Hi Sondra.
There is so much. Hi Kenny. Like, there's just so much going on. Like, I'm looking at my notes here and I'm going, how is this all in one episode? How? What? Like, I got done watching this episode and I felt like I'd watched, you know, a lot of episodes and was just like, did all of this seriously just happen? I don't know what's going on. And also, like, last night, you know, obviously we watched TLC and there's so much bonker stuff there. I think wrestling might have actually broken my brain this week. I'm not super sure what's going on anymore.
Well, because I messaged Sondra last week. So I apologize for this episode being late. We are going to try and get it back on track this Friday. I was watching it the other day and I messaged Sondra and I was like, I've got so many notes and I'm 36 minutes in.
And Kenny doesn't take like a ton of notes, not like, cause I overwrite about things, right? Because I don't want to forget. And you know, I'm overzealous with my note taking. Kenny is usually like, he sticks to the basics and the, you know, just kind of the, you know, like, your notes are what you need to have, but mostly you just kind of go with it. And when you're like, I have this many lines of notes and I'm 36 minutes in, I was like, oh my goodness, what is going to happen in this episode? And so I'm watching it the other day and I was like, Kenny was right. There is so much going on. And then I paused just to see the little timestamp because I was like, I wonder if I'm about 36 minutes in because, you know, that's the point where Kenny was like, I have all these notes, da da da. I was 22 minutes into the episode. I hadn't even gotten to some of the stuff yet. I was just like, what in the... And then I got a little sad because there was that much longer left of the episode to watch. But like, oh boy.
I mean, there's
boy.
Some weeks though that we've watched this where we would kill for an hour of noteworthy stuff to happen. I mean,
yes.
There was the depths of depravity of South Africa, dare I remind you.
Oh, I sadly remember that, what was it, Jesse James versus Triple H match that went on for like 10 hours of my life with no commentary. I will take this over that for sure. But yeah, it's just, it's crazy.
And I've actually already watched the October 27th episode as well, and like, there's so, like, I forgot how kind of good the build is to Survivor Series 97. Like, it's pretty good. Like, there's lots of stories, lots of interesting stuff going on. And also, like you say, TLC was last night. Oh my god. Like, if MD ever says to me, why do you watch WWE? I'd be like, watch that main event. That's why I watch. Cause that,
like,
was fucking
great. Like,
I don't
actually know what all I saw in the main event. I was just kind of like, this is absolutely bonkers and none of it makes any sense, but I think I really like it. And then there was a garbage truck because wrestling, the worst thing is
when you actually think about it, it actually does make sense. That's the weird thing. They give you the whole story throughout the night, you know, like Strowman and Kane, are they going to, you know, they're going to get on? And then, you know, Kane eventually ends up hitting Strowman by mistake, and then they start fighting, and then there's the chairs, the beauty of the chairs, and Kurt Angle looking like the best dad cosplay that the world has ever seen.
Oh my gosh, wasn't he so adorable coming down through the crowd with them? But like, okay, so, cause I haven't really been that into the whole Shield reunion thing, even before the whole Kurt Angle deal. I wasn't that into it.
We did the SummerSlam podcast, and you were like, I don't really like the Ambrose and Rollins thing, and David and I were like, what?
Yeah, and you guys were like, you're insane. And I mean, I feel the same way about even when Roman joined them. I was just kind of like, I don't understand why the Miztourage is the motivation for the Shield getting back together. And then when it became, you know, Miz and Sheamus and Cesaro versus the Shield, I was like, that match is going to be good. But like, it does feel like those Shield six-mans where it's just the Shield put against three guys, right? And those, I always really liked the matches when that happened back in the day, back in the glory days of the Shield, but it always just kind of seemed like, well, it's the Shield versus three guys and the Shield's going to win because they're the Shield, right? And so I kind of felt the same way about going into TLC. I was just like, well, it's just the Shield versus a bunch of guys. And then making it 5-on-3 made no sense to me. I was like, why are you having it be 5-on-3? That's weird, I guess. Like, I'm glad that Braun Strowman and Kane had to kind of take each other out in order for the Shield to win. And Miz was so incredible in that final. Anyway, we're not supposed to be talking about TLC, but I never get to. So
it's fine. But so tonight, the key thing is David and I are going to sit down minimum 90 minutes, ladies and gentlemen, to talk about show. I mean,
it's going to take you guys a while.
I mean, like, this is so stupid, right? So today I came home because I went to the gym and stuff and did some errands. And oh, by the way, so this is really funny. So I am, not to go too far into the behind the scenes of Inside the Ropes or anything, but...
I always get nervous when you say that. Like, I always get nervous.
But I've been kind of like,
I never know what you're going to come out with.
Or do you know what I'm even going to say? Like, am I just breaking news to you on air?
You have done that to me so many times where I'm like, oh yeah, I totally know. No, I don't know about this. Fuck it, Kenny.
Listen, a lot goes on. It's hard for me to keep. And then the thing is, you live in a different continent. That's the problem. If you lived in the same continent, you'd know so much more stuff.
I could.
But yeah, so anyway, so I'm now sort of like centralizing all the accounts of Inside the Ropes so that we have like one, you know, secure business bank account that all the Inside the Ropes stuff goes through, right? Because that's what you do when you're grown up and you have a business. So I sorted all that out over the last couple of weeks and it's all been good. And then like I got a card sent out in the post. And like, you know how like you use like a Visa card to do transactions and stuff?
Yes, and I'm familiar with credit card use.
And they sent me out this weird like business operator card. That's like not even a Visa card. I was like, what am I going to do with that? Like, what is, I can't transact anything. It's not even a card. So anyway, I go into the branch and the branch are like, well, our business manager's not in right now, but he's going to call you back. So he called me this afternoon. And he was like, hey, just to let you know, you were supposed to get a Visa debit card as part of the account. I'm sorry it didn't come out. I'm going to get one ordered for you today. I was like, that's brilliant. Thank you very much. And he went, oh, sorry. Can I just, he said, just to tell you before you go, he was like, I can't believe I'm talking to Kenny from Inside the Ropes. And I was like, are you serious?
Oh my gosh!
And he was like, mate, I've been to all the Glasgow shows, DDP, Sting, Steiner. He was like, I'm going to Scott Hall in a couple of weeks. And I was like, great, cool. And he was like, if you need anything, you just phone me, let me know. And I was like, great, good to have a man in the inside. And he was like, see you at Scott Hall. And away he went.
That's amazing. You have connections at the bank. I mean, that could be helpful.
Yeah, you never know when we want to try and get the rock. Can we borrow $1 million?
Right.
So that was funny. But anyway, so I came home and I was like sitting having lunch and stuff. And I thought, I'm going to put on the pay-per-view again because I want to just watch a little bit of the pay-per-view. And like, you know, because when I was watching it, it's like 3 a.m. I'd had a drink, I'd got a wee bit high. So like I was kind of, you know, in an alleviated state. And I watched the main event back from start to finish. And I just loved the whole thing. And then at the end, when Kurt Angle came back out, I actually got a tear in my eye. I was like, so happy for him.
It was so great. Like, I still sometimes hear the music and get confused because I think of the Patriot because this is what you've done to me. But like,
what a sad
it was
thing
so
to be
great.
Alive. Oh no, it's the Patriot. Fuck.
Right? I'm like, what's Del Wilkes doing here? But no, like, the main event was just so bonkers. Like, it was absolutely bonkers. And it's one of those things where like, even if the build didn't really thrill me, like, The Miz is incredible. And I don't know, just the craziness of it. Like, whatever illness is sweeping the WWE for the win at this point, because it made that pay-per-view so much better. Like,
and also
Finn Balor versus AJ Styles.
Oh my god, so good. It was so good. Oh. We're currently as well, just want to say very quickly, we're sitting at 565 patron pledgers. The highest we've ever been at. It's growing by the day. Thank you very much to everybody who is pledging any of your money towards us. I really appreciate it. I know all of us do.
Yes, I second that. It's very appreciated for me as well. It's really, really cool to see how much more support we've gotten, even this month. Like, normally, you know, we expect to see numbers kind of go up around WrestleMania because people are in, you know, wrestling mood and it's the season to get super excited and we put out all sorts of bonus content and whatnot. And it's really cool that in October of all months, where it's usually not the most exciting time, like obviously some exciting shakeups have happened in WWE, but it's not like it's the most exciting time in wrestling. It's really cool to see how many people are coming out and supporting us and for some reason saying that they want to hear more of us talking about wrestling, right? Like we put out so many free shows every week that I'm sometimes just like, people want more of us? Really? That's great. Like, it's really, it means a lot.
I don't know if I can keep talking about wrestling any more than I do. I don't know if there's a market for it. But what I will say is to thank everybody who's signed up. Tonight, obviously, at the $3 level, you can hear the full 90-plus minute review of TLC that David and I will be doing. Also, tomorrow, exclusively on Patreon for the time being, you will have the exclusive interview that I conducted this past weekend with the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. Ladies and gentlemen, he is coming on the show. He's going to be talking about why he's working at NXT, looking forward to War Games. We talked about One Night Only from 1997. Such good stuff. That's going to be up there tomorrow. First of all, for everybody on Patreon, because you guys are putting your money to us, and I feel like we need to keep giving that back to you. If you don't subscribe on Patreon, don't worry. Like Sandra says, there are 4 free podcasts. Speaking of which, one of them we're going to do right now, which is Retro Raw. So it's time to talk about the October 20th, 1997 episode of Retro Raw. But first, as always, I want to tell you what happened on the shotgun tapings at this show before we have Raw. So on the shotgun tapings that would air on October 25th of 1997, we had a singles match where Brian Christopher went beat Scott Taylor, who would go later be his tag team partner Scotty Too Hotty. We had the Godwins defeating the New Blackjacks in a tag team match. We had Savio, this is a weird one, Savio Vega of Los Boricuas defeating the Sultan.
Savio Vega versus the Sultan sounds amazing.
And then in the main event, this is quite a big match for Shotgun, actually. We had the Hart Foundation duo of the British Bulldog and Jim Neville Neidhart defeating the team of Goldust and the Patriot. So,
I mean, Goldust and the Patriot belong on Shotgun for sure, but having, you know, Anvil and Bulldog on there, that definitely raises the stock of Shotgun Saturday Night a little bit. I'm not going to watch it. But
so there you go. Well, I mean, you can't. It's not even available. I've been trying to find some of them to even find the... I was very morbidly curious to see Savio and the Sultan together, but, you know, I'm not going to, like, buy a tape from someone. I was just seeing if it was on YouTube. But anyway,
can you imagine that conversation, like seeking the, you know, the depths of Reddit or whatever, like, does anyone have Shotgun Saturday Night from October 25th, 1997? And people will be like, you know, someone comes forward with an old VHS and says, yes, I have this. Like, just out of curiosity, Kenny, why did you want the October 25th, 1997 episode of Shotgun Saturday Night? Well, I really wanted to see that Savio Vega Sultan match.
That'd be a new low point in my life, really. I also, a very, very quick shout out to Karan as well. Karan, the sweetheart that he is, somebody, I think a guy called Alan Cheapshot or something on Twitter, had spoken to someone who just got some tapes from Bobby Heenan's personal collection, and they put the footage online, finally,
of
Hulk
that's
Hogan
awesome.
Celebrating with Vince McMahon and Randy Savage after WrestleMania 9. It was just a gif of like 10 seconds, but it made me very, very happy. So thank you, Karan, for pointing that out to me so I got to see it. I was very happy. So, Retro Raw, October 20th, 1997. So much to talk about. We kicked the show off with the Legion of Doom coming out. They're the new tag team champions. Massive reception. Then Ahmed Johnson comes out. He is, he's mental. He jumps up onto the apron and he, like, just makes it.
He almost misses. Like, so, he almost falls down.
I have, like, in full capitals, stop taking risks, Ahmed! Because Ahmed should not be taking risks at all.
He really shouldn't. I mean, his hand is still super bandaged up, too. Like, should he be wrestling? Is this a good idea? Because I feel like we just need to wrap Ahmed Johnson in bubble wrap at this point, because he's just going to get hurt again, and I feel bad for him.
It's bad. But Ahmed's going to be teamed with Ken Shamrock. As Ken Shamrock's coming out, there's a little kid dressed as Hawk who's adorable, and then, like, a guy tries to put a sign up in front of him, and he just gets really angry and starts shouting at the person.
Which, as he should, frankly. I mean, first of all, it's great that he starts shouting because he's emulating his hero Hawk, right? But don't put a sign up in front of a kid's face. That's a dick move.
I mean, I don't know if the guy specifically knew the kid behind him was dressed as Hawk, but I do. It's just great because the camera, like, pans into the wee boy who, for a moment, just has, like, no facial expression, and then when the sign goes up, he starts going, rah, 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 rah. So that made me
laugh. That's great. I was confused about this match because they don't really announce who the match is. So LOD come out, and I'm like, okay, we're going to get LOD in a tag match. And then Ahmed Johnson and Ken Shamrock came out, and I was like, LOD versus Ahmed Johnson and Ken Shamrock seems like an odd choice, given that they're teammates. And it's like, oh, versus the Nation of Domination. So then I thought that it was going to be like an 8-man tag, but it turns out it wasn't. They're not very good at clarifying these. It wasn't until, like, the match really got started that I was like, oh, all right. So it's actually Ahmed and Shamrock versus, what was it, Kama and Rocky, right?
Kama and Rocky, yeah. Kama and Rocky, but it's... I mean, because Tony Chimble does say, here are your new WWF Tag Team Champions, Legion of Doom. And then when Ahmed comes out, he's like, the following contest. And you're like, oh, okay. Trying to figure it out.
Well, I was just confused why LOD were out there.
Because they're trying to, like, make sure the Nation of Domination don't have that gang warfare advantage, Sandra.
Well, clearly, but I didn't know that the Nation of Domination was involved in the segment when LOD came out. So it was just very confusing.
I'll send a memo to Stanford that they should they should, you know, stop doing confusing storylines.
Send a very stern email.
So we start off with a big brawl, DX it out, kind of on top of the stage. There's a I'd rather be in China sign, but my favorite sign of all was China, who is wearing this glorious kind of like purple. What even is the material of what she's wearing? Like lycra, leathery, something.
It's something. And it's very shiny.
And there's a China has a sign up saying "Spank me, Vince," and then Lawler's just like laughing, going, "Ah, look, she's got a sign saying spank you." And Vince just goes, "I beg your pardon." Like, it's like knowing what Vince does in the future in television. The fact that he is even in any way fazed by a "Spank me, Vince" sign,
right? Like he comes, he's still coming across as Vince McMahon who doesn't want to say the word ass, and who's like, you know, this is uncalled for, and da 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 da. Like he's still being prim and proper Vince, which is just baffling when you see footage from later on in Vince McMahon's career. But yeah, so DX on the ramp, I'm just like, oh, for fuck's sake, they're here. Of course they would be here. Why are they here? Like, they had an Uncle Tom 316 sign as well.
Of course they did. Of course they did. The Spank Me Vince thing did make me laugh, as I've got to admit. I can't lie to you, Sandra.
I mean, that's fine if it made you laugh. I roll my eyes at DX. They're just not for me.
I don't think they are for you at all. But luckily in the ring, we get Shamrock on fire. Rocky Maivia did the People's Elbow, I think for the first time. Even though it wasn't called the People's Elbow, but it's the exact same elbow, but before
But it's what he did. It's just, you know, it didn't have quite as many theatrics and the crowd didn't respond to it as such because, you know, it was the first time we'd seen it.
And then Farouk ends up getting involved and hit. So Rick Rude comes down and Farouk manages to get Rick Rude's briefcase, hits Shamrock with it, and that allows the Nation of Domination to get the win. Then post-match, this is my favorite thing ever. If you watch this in the succession, it's so good. So the Nation win and they go to leave. And then Ahmed just gently jogs up the ramp to try and attack the Nation of Domination. He gets up there and attacks them. And as he's, like, at the top of the ramp, fighting with the Nation, and they're basically beating him up in a 4-on-1 attack, the camera pans back, and you see the Legion of Doom walking so incredibly slowly up the ramp that they have, like, no intention of helping Ahmed whatsoever. It was so good.
I mean, so good. The Legion of Doom are kind of dicks here, because, I mean, poor Ahmed. Although Ahmed, like, he didn't really run, I would say.
But also,
to try and attack
if him. I was an LOD, I'd kind of like, oh, I mean, is he with them? Is he with us? I don't really know. And you never know
with
Ahmed.
I mean, granted, Ahmed's history with the Nation of Domination is suspect, so that does make sense. Where was Ken Shamrock? Was he still laid out?
He was getting up. I feel like the thing with Ahmed and the Nation, Ahmed's, like, your pal who went out with that absolute arsehole guy. And then Ahmed always wants you to talk shit about the guy. He's always like, oh, he's such a dick, isn't he? Such a dick. And wants you to actively participate in calling him names and then keeps going back to him.
Yeah.
And then you're meant to just be like, oh, great. Nice to see you, Steve.
Like, oh, yeah. So I'm really glad that you're together again, even though I've just been encouraged to talk shit about you regularly.
Ahmed and the Nation are that dysfunctional
relationship. Yeah.
But luckily, Sandra, you thought you were going to get this whole opening segment and match, you know, big characters, big action, crowd are going wild, and then as
yeah,
LOD,
I was fine with everything. I mean, I wasn't fine with DX. I was already a little annoyed about DX happening. But then, just for me,
the Godwins attack the Legion of Doom at the top of the
Godwins. Get them the fuck away from the Legion of Doom. Get them the fuck away from the tag team titles. I want them to have nothing to do with Legion of Doom or anyone else in the tag division. You know where I want them to go? The Sun is where I want the Godwins to go. I just, ugh.
Now, something I'd completely forgotten about was this era of Godwins. So I want you to try, if you can, from an unbiased point of view, explain to me what's happened with the Godwins' gear.
Well, I mean, the Godwins, I think they're still wearing the overalls, but over the overalls, they're wearing Oklahoma Sooner shirts, but they have Sooners crossed out, and then they've spray-painted Texas Longhorns over Oklahoma Sooners, because they're rivals, like, they're sports rivals. So they're doing the whole, like, hey, look, we're in Oklahoma City, and we're gonna wear your sports team's gear, but then cross out Sooners and write Texas Longhorns. So what I assume happened is the Godwins were like, oh, we have this great idea. We need to get heel heat in Oklahoma. it would be a great idea to wear, you know, Texas Longhorn shirts because, ooh, rivalry, But they didn't think that far ahead and couldn't get Texas Longhorn shirts. So they went down to like the campus store that day or something and bought Sooner shirts and then just crossed it out.
That works for me as an explanation. I'm going to go with it. We cut backstage to see the Nation of Domination's locker room has been ransacked. There's lots of debris. Oh, this is problematic. There's like racial
problematic
stuff.
Problematic is one way of describing this.
There's
yes.
like Malcolm X crossed out, stay in your home country. KFC was like a, you know, no cross through it.
Yeah, the international no sign over
Canada
KFC.
Rules.
Homie go home or homie stay home.
And this is all
was written on there.
This is all obviously DX trying to make it out of the Hart Foundation have done this. The Hart Foundation, of course, are allowed no form of rebuttal on commentary. I was watching part of this show with my friend Jamie, and I was like, Bret had creative control and he let them do this?
Because Bret Hart has famously spoken about how he really didn't like this angle, right? Because they made him look like a racist. And so as I'm watching this play out, I'm like, I understand why Bret Hart would not be very pleased with this, because it is very obviously DX, right? Like, it's totally DX doing this, especially when DX kind of tipped their hand with that Uncle Tom 316 sign earlier on, right? Like, we're supposed to know that this is DX, right?
Yes,
so,
yes.
Because it seems very obvious, but, like, there's just, it's so incredibly racist and terrible. And then, like, it doesn't help matters that when we do go back to the arena and, you know, Nation of Domination is raging, obviously, like, they go to commentary and Farouk gets in Vince's face and he's, like, raging about racism in the WWF and everything. And you know what? He totally has a point, because in the crowd, in the front row, there's a Farouk's Hooked on Ebonics sign. That's just right behind them during this whole segment. And I'm like, welp. Yep. Proving the point.
Farouk comes down to ringside. He starts screaming at Vince. Is this what you wanted from a multiracial organization? He basically calls Vince a racist. Vince is going mad. Farouk says that black people built America. He always knew there was racism in the WWF. Then he gets in the ring and you know, basically claims that the WWF is now completely racist. He knew it all along. He tells Bret Hart to bring his pale ass out here. Bret comes out with the Hart Foundation. Vince is basically saying on commentary that Bret did it, because Vince was like, well, if the Hart Foundation did it, then I really hope that Farouk kicks his ass. And I'm like, why are you doing this?
It doesn't make any sense. Because, well, I mean, the thing is, like, I mean, you and I both know that this is DX. But on commentary, they're not playing it up as though it's DX.
I mean,
they're playing it up
as
though it's actually the Hart Foundation. And because there's the Canadian flag and it said Hart's Rule and everything, like, they're playing along like they are so dumb that they think the Hart Foundation actually did this.
I mean, as a kid, I knew it was DX. Like, it's not difficult for anyone to comprehend.
Well, because
it's
so obvious that it's DX, right? Like, because they're the ones coming out and like making a mockery of everything. Although, in the first match that we saw, one of the things that I didn't mention was Farouk getting Rick Rude's briefcase and whatnot. It was kind of like, do DX and the Nation have a relationship? Like, are they working together? I was like, did Farouk pay the premium to get the policy from, you know, shit-stained suit Rick Rude or something? I don't know. But it's all kind of, but it's so obviously DX. And it really bugged me that when Bret Hart came out, and when the Hart Foundation came out, they came out really slowly. Like, it was a big production, right? Like, Bulldog came out and Anvil came out and then Owen, and then they wait for it. And then, you know, finally there's Bret to kind of a pop. Like, even though he's supposed to have been a heel in America, he still gets a pop when he comes out. But, like, he doesn't get to say anything. He doesn't get to deny that it was them. You're just sort of supposed to go with the fact that the Hart Foundation did it, I guess. And you say that Vince McMahon is raging on commentary, but he's just kind of sitting there rolling his eyes at Farouk. Like, Farouk doesn't have a point, and, like, Farouk doesn't have a right to be angry.
No,
Farouk has a right to be angry.
There is a point where Farouk is basically making it like Vince is racist, and that's when Vince is like, oh, come on. That's
right,
not the case.
Right.
Like, he is, like, he's angry, but he's only angry when it's unfair that he might be the racist. He's fine with the idea that Bret's the racist. But
well, and he almost defends it, though. There's one point where he says, vandalism does not necessarily relate to racism. Did you see what was written on the walls? Like,
but every cloud.
How? Like,
lining.
Yeah, it's true. Like, all vandalism is not necessarily racist. This vandalism was fucking racist.
every cloud has a silver lining, and the silver lining is we did get to see a match here with Bret Hart against Farouk, which is a very jarring match, because I never, you know, you never thought you'd get to see that. It was supposed to be the main event, but it's happening right now because of obviously all the racism.
Yeah, because Farouk got angry and said, you know, we'll settle this right now, get your pale ass out here. And, you know, I mean, Farouk, I don't know, like, I feel bad for Farouk. I don't understand how I'm supposed to boo Farouk here when he's like, we're good enough to pick up after you, good enough to wash your cars, but you won't come out and face me like a man and all this stuff. And I'm just like, Farouk has a point, because the shit that was written on the walls was fucking racist, and then there are signs in the crowd that are fucking racist, and how am I supposed to boo them for being like, hey racists, you're being racist? I don't understand how they're the heels.
So we get Bret versus Farouk. It's funny because Bret's coming out like barely has his jacket on, because obviously he's not expecting the match to be now. All the Hart Foundation are basically not ready, and they're like getting ready as they come down. DX are at ringside, obviously, because they have to be. Farouk and Bret are kind of going at it, but then the Nation and the Hearts getting a big brawl, all hell breaks loose. DX returns to the locker room. Bret's going for the ring post figure four, but the Nation of Domination, of course, have a problem. Another brawl ensues, and then out of nowhere, as everybody's brawling on the outside and Farouk's on the inside, out of nowhere, Stone Cold Steve Austin comes through the crowd and gives Farouk a Stone Cold Stunner, flips him off, runs away, and Bret, having no idea what happens, is just smart enough to come in and just cover Farouk and get the 1-2-3. So essentially, Steve Austin has helped Bret Hart beat Farouk.
Yep, that definitely
kind of loved it.
That's a real thing.
There's a great
bit
where
the camera. What I was baffled by was, like, did Earl Hebner take a bump at some point where I missed it?
Because he was on the outside trying to break up the brawl.
That's where he was. Okay. Because the brawl that happens when Bret Hart goes for the figure four on the ring post and the Nation just attacks him, I'm like, shouldn't that be a disqualification? I thought Hebner was around. I don't know if he was being distracted by someone else. But then later on, you know, Austin stunners Farouk and Bret pins Farouk because for some reason this match was still happening despite all the chaos.
Do you know, like, one of my favorite things, though, is when Austin was stunnering Farouk, it did one of those great things where the camera started shaking because people were going so mental.
Yeah, that was really cool.
I mean, this was absolute chaos, so I kind of had fun watching it. When it kind of got away from the racist... I mean, here's the thing. If you can sort of, like, take the awful racist storyline away and just kind of enjoy the chaos of the match, then you can enjoy it. If you can't, then I guess you can't, which is totally understandable. But
I enjoyed the chaos of the match for sure. And I get why Farouk would be angry at Bret Hart. What bugged me was just that Bret Hart didn't get to, you know, say anything and didn't get to defend the Hart Foundation at all. Like, none of them got a chance to be on the mic. Like, DX goes down, right? So fucking DX goes down to commentary. Sean is always like stealing headsets, and he gets on the headset saying, like, I knew Bret Hart was a lot of things, but I didn't know he was a racist and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just thinking of that awful blackface skit that DX is going to do in a little while. And I'm just like, all right, Sean, sure. But, you know, DX can go down and steal headsets and get on commentary. And, you know, we've seen Steve Austin go down to commentary and steal headsets and talk and whatnot. Like, why wouldn't someone in the Hart Foundation go to commentary and be like, hey, look, excuse me, we're being accused of this and we are totally not guilty.
From what I understand, it was kind of like Bret wasn't going to die on that hill, because obviously he... like, as far as he was aware at that point, he was going to be able to go out the way he wanted, you know, drop the belt the way he wanted, and so he was kind of like, well, I'll let this stuff go, I'm leaving anyway, because I'm getting to leave how I want.
Okay.
But watching it in hindsight, it's more difficult because you know that he doesn't get to leave how he wanted.
No, and I mean, even if he knows he's going to leave how he wants and whatnot, I don't know. Like, I would still, just in character and in storyline, it doesn't make sense. If the Hart Foundation is being accused of being racist and being accused of doing, you know, vandalism to the Nation's locker room, why wouldn't the Hart Foundation be like, no, you're full of shit, we didn't do it, because they legitimately didn't do it. This isn't like when the World Wrestling Federation Championship was missing and everyone was like, who stole the belt? Who stole the belt? And the Hart Foundation were like, totally wasn't me, and Owen actually had stolen it.
I mean, the other thing is, I think if you just watch what happened in the arena, it probably doesn't come across as strongly as it does watching it at home with all the commentary. So I imagine that with Bret, he was maybe told that commentary was going to help him out a little bit, and then commentary didn't. I would imagine that's what
definitely
happened.
Didn't.
Now Vince had promised tonight that we were going to see a former WCW champion show up on Raw, and
yes,
that's what we got. Because out of nowhere,
so what I have written down here is some blonde man is getting into the ring. Had no idea who he was, and then I was like, oh wait, that's Jeff Jarrett. Just.
Like,
just
I
why?
Don't know if Jeff Jarrett has ever looked smaller than he did here.
He just looked like
tiny.
A blonde guy in a bad suit. Like, he just, he did look tiny as well. I would not have known that he was, like, a wrestler or whatever. I just thought he was, like, a dude. I thought he was going to be, like, make some corporate announcement or something that the WWF had a partnership with, like, I don't know, Cash for Gold.
I like the continuity. Now, this interview is very interesting for a couple of reasons. Obviously, you know, Jeff Jarrett had walked out before on the WWF. When Jeff Jarrett did this interview, live in the ring on Raw, he was not signed to a contract yet.
Really?
Yep. He was negotiating for a contract, and he had not signed one at this point. Bruce Pritchard has talked about on his podcast that he was vehemently against the idea of Jarrett being able to do a promo in the ring, not under contract, but Vince took Jarrett at his word, and, you know, they did it the way they did it. So, Jarrett comes out, and he does, I think this is maybe one of the first people who's just, like, switched company, and just turned up on the other one week later, because he was on Nitro 2 weeks ago, and okay. Now he's all of a sudden on Raw. So he comes in, he does a shoot promo, where he, you know, right before that, I do want to say we got an advert for the Jax Bone Crunching Action Tag Team Series 1. I got all those figures as a Christmas present in 1997, so I have very good memories of making LOD constantly beat the Godwins and having the Headbangers constantly beat the Blackjacks in all matches.
Amazing.
Anyway.
I love that the Headbangers are playing with the toys in the ad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who else would? Jarrett is coming back, he's burying Nitro and Bischoff and the offer that they gave him. He talks about, you know, they're saying that they pulled the offer, but, you know, that's not the case. He cuts a promo about, you know, he had to be paired with a football player, which was Steve Mongo McMichael. Still freaks me out.
I was wondering who it was, because he says an ex-football player who can't even lock up and his wife, she gives a new meaning to the words dumb blonde.
Which is Deborah.
And I was like, is that Deborah?
Yeah, Deborah.
But I didn't know who she was married to before.
Deborah, who eventually comes into the WWF with Jeff Jarrett. So, it just goes so full circle at some point. So he shoots about having to be teamed with Steve McMichael and Deborah. He then buries Vince McMahon for making him Double J back in the day. He tells Vince that he needs him. He knocks Vince for putting other promoters out of business in the 80s. He talks about, you know, the WWF. He said, you know, Bret Hart, the best that ever was being the operative word. He knocks Shawn Michaels for wrestling once a week. And he's like, you know, you're the icon that can still go. Well, how often can you go? I'm surprised he actually was able to say all that and get away with it, to be honest. And then comes a line that I don't think people knew, but this changed the course of Jeff Jarrett's career. Because when this promo was happening, Steve Austin was backstage, near the monitor or near the gorilla position, whatever. Vince Russo wrote this promo for Jeff Jarrett because Vince Russo was friends with Jeff Jarrett. Vince Russo was the one who got him to come back. And Vince Russo structured the line where Jarrett would say that Austin 316 is blasphemous. He's ripping off the Bible to put money in his pocket. Jarrett never told Austin he was going to say this.
Oh, I mean, he also does say to Austin, you will always be the ringmaster.
Which I think that would have been fine.
Which I think I just liked that line.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was kind of like, oh, okay, yeah. But so Austin didn't know that he was going to be called out for blasphemy and like having his merchandise offend him and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because at this point, Austin's still kind of on the rise. And like the way Austin saw it is, you're messing with my livelihood. Like you're messing potentially with my merch.
Yeah, because encouraging people not to buy his merch.
So this would end up being part of the catalyst of why in 2 years' time, Steve Austin refuses to work with Jeff Jarrett multiple times. Which then leads to Jeff Jarrett holding the WWF up for money and leaving in 1999. But a lot of it is to do with the fact that Jarrett cut this promo without speaking to Austin. Which was a mistake. I think.
I mean, he probably should have cleared it with him.
So, this promo is just
especially if it's going to affect his merchandise. This promo was very... So, Jeff Jarrett is basically the original Dolph Ziggler, right? Like, he's complaining about booking and, you know, not being given opportunity and how he's so good, except, like, Dolph is actually better at delivering the lines. This promo was, like, it was fascinating for the stuff that he was allowed to say on TV, you know, talking about, like, last week on Monday Nitro, Jeff Jarrett was declared pretty much dead and they did everything in their power to bury me. And, you know, Eric, the only thing you ever pulled from Jeff Jarrett was opportunity, like calling out Bischoff and calling out WCW and calling out Vince McMahon and asking what his excuses are. Cause you know, he says something about Eric Bischoff and then he's like, well, Vince, what's your excuse for, you know, all the terrible stuff you made me go through? He's like, you put me with a clown, a drug addict, a black man who can't even speak the English language. And I was like, oh boy, did I not need to hear that after the last segment. Okay.
Fair though, when you think about Ahmed.
Well, I mean, bless him. But like, it was fascinating all the stuff that he was allowed to say, but his delivery wasn't great. It was just kind of flat and monotone. And then, Jeff says something at one point. He's like, Vince needs Jeff Jarrett for ratings. And JR just goes, I thought we were doing pretty well without him. I was like, yeah. I mean, accurate, right? And yep. And I mean, when he ends the promo with, you wanted the real Jeff Jarrett tonight. You got him. I just hope your investment is going to be worth all the headaches. So he's basically saying, if you offer me a contract and give me money, I will be a pain in the ass. Like, is that really the way to go about
it? Well, on screen, what he's basically saying is Vince has re-signed him. So, in storyline, he's been re-signed. So Vince is, it's too late for Vince. He's already signed the headache.
Okay. Can we just send him back? Like, is there a return policy?
You're actually going to like Jeff Jarrett. You're not going to want him to go back. Give it six,
I know that I'm going
months.
To like Jeff Jarrett, but now, you're this have version to go... of Jeff Jarrett, I was just like, eh.
You think this
My
one's
favorite
bad?
Part of the promo was when someone threw a scream mask at Vince randomly from the audience. Did you realize? Did you notice this?
That was tremendous. I do just want to say, though.
Vince takes it, looks at it, and then, like, holds it up in front of his face. It was the most random moment, but it cracked me up.
If you think Jeff Jarrett is bad right now, it gets so much worse before it gets better. Oh my God.
No.
Anyway, Vince tries to get JR to say Survivor Series Super Supper Sweepstakes three times fast. JR says, can't handle it.
That was great. He's like, nope.
That leads us to Brian Christopher, who is coming down with Jerry Lawler to go up against Mark Merrill with Sable. You know, Mark Merrill has got that kind of serious attitude still. You know, he needs to get victories. And then what's interesting is Lawler... puts an Austin 316 hat on Sable, and she's quite happy to shill an Austin 316 hat. We've already seen her shill the t-shirts in the past. And once Mark Merrill sees that she has this on, he comes out and grabs the hat and flings it into the audience. He's raging. Then Lawler tries to get involved to distract Mark Merrill, but Mark Merrill uses the distraction to low blow Brian Christopher, hit the TKO, get the 1-2-3. What do you make here of Mark Merrill's kind of, you know, attitude here, specifically not really being that enamored with Sable and her shilling, and just the kind of whole match, I guess.
I mean, so first of all, is this supposed to be a light heavyweight match? Or is it just Brian Christopher
versus Mark Merrill?
Okay, I was very confused, because I was like, Mark Merrill should not be a light heavyweight, but okay. So that clears some stuff up. So, I mean, I know where the whole Mark Merrill-Sable thing goes, so I know what it's like leading to, I guess. I don't understand why he would have such a problem with her wearing a hat unless he's like, don't promote another superstar's merchandise. You're supposed to only promote me.
I think the idea, like, though, the idea that we're building towards is that Mark Merrill is trying to get himself, he's trying to get himself over. He's trying to get himself in a position, and Sable is the bigger star.
And he doesn't like that Sable is stealing the attention from him.
Yeah, which I think is quite a clever story. I like the story.
Yeah, it's interesting for sure. I mean, I don't understand how you think Sable's not going to get more attention than you when you parade her out there in this black shiny outfit with like a spider web thing over her stomach cutout, and her boobs are spilling out to the point that her implant outlines are super visible. So like, you can actually see the outline of the implant because she's so like smushed and pushed up, right? And, you know, I mean, that's fine if she wants to parade around like that. Sable's just not really my type, and I've just never been that into her. Like, she's just not for me. But obviously she's going to get attention dressed like that. I mean, you have her essentially just dressed in a cat suit every week. So maybe don't bring your wife to ringside if you don't want her to get more attention than you. But the story is interesting for sure. Like, I'm curious to see how it plays out, because this is one of the storylines that when we started doing Retro Raw, I was like, I'm really intrigued to how I'm going to actually react to it, because I think people probably expect me to react a certain way, and I'm not sure if I'm going to or not. Like, I think people probably expect me to hate it. I don't know if I'm going to, just because I'm intrigued.
I think you're going to enjoy
it. Sable's terrible, but
I think you're going to enjoy this a lot more than people think you are.
I probably will.
Yeah. Cause actually, well, the story of Sable really is actually, I can't believe it is a kind of empowering story, really.
But because it kind
about,
of is.
It's about
in
a
way.
Woman who, like, you know, she's choosing to dress in the leather stuff that she's wearing. It's not his choice. He's angry at her because she's using attributes to get attention. And mm-hmm. that's her choice. She's not being forced to do that. This is her choice. So I'm enjoying watching it back. I like how subtle it is to start off. You know, Mero didn't do it straight away. But he's getting a little bit agitated.
Yeah, and it's all like, it's all little things too, right? Like after the match, after Mark Mero wins with the TKO, you know, they're celebrating, they're going to leave and that kind of stuff. By the way, Mark Mero hitting Christopher with a low blow to win, it's just like Mark Mero is a dick now, right? Like this felt kind of heel versus heel because Mark Mero's angry and raging and, you know, being kind of a jerk to Sable. And then also he's winning with a low blow. Like I know Brian Christopher hit an eye rake on Mark Mero as well, but it's still kind of like, well, you didn't exactly win clean.
Jerry Lawler was trying to get involved, so.
Right, of course. But, you know, Sable keeps trying to wave to the crowd because they're giving her attention and she likes the attention a lot. And Mark Mero just kind of like grabs her arm and rushes her off. So it's subtle, but the tension is definitely there. The story is intriguing for sure.
We kick off hour two with a very, very fun video package of Owen Hart and Shawn Michaels and their history together. They take us back to 1995, the infamous match from Raw where Owen Hart, midway through a match with Shawn Michaels like collapses and passes out, and they do this big story where it builds to Shawn's return to win the Royal Rumble, to go into WrestleMania 12, to become the champion, blah 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 blah. So it's champion versus champion. Owen Hart versus Shawn Michaels, IC champ versus European champ. Will he get some revenge for the Bulldog for what happened at One Night Only? Now Owen says in the promo in the ring, he says, you know, I'll keep the Hart Foundation out of this, you keep DX out of this, let's find out who the best man really is. So Shawn actually tells DX to go back. Rick Rude does have some problems with the microphone at first. It just does not work.
Rick Rude has problems in general. Like, Rick Rude is so bad.
It's funny, I was sitting with Jamie and we were just like, he is terrible, isn't he? Such a shit.
He's really
there's
bad.
Things I don't want to realise, and the one bad thing about doing Retro Raw is I realised that Rick Rude was shite in 1997. I didn't know this.
He's really bad.
All right, stop pointing out, Sandra. Really point out every fucking week.
Well, he keeps being bad every fucking week. Well, it doesn't mean he was any good in 1997.
Fucking poor Rick Rude's family haven't listened to this.
I've heard tell that he was very, very good earlier on in his career. 1997 was just not his year, clearly.
I'm going to try before NXT TakeOver War Games for us to watch two War Games matches and maybe podcast about it. And we'll watch the 92 one, which he's in. Where he's good.
Good.
Anyway.
I look forward to seeing him being, you know, not this. Because, you know, I mean, he gets on the microphone, he's like, what I'd like to have right now is for all you sleazy, slimy, Oklahoma idiots and blah, 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 blah. And that's just like a callback to what he used to say in promos, right? Like calling people sweat hogs and stuff.
Yep.
Okay.
He wasn't
even that good at doing that. I was like, if you're calling back to what you were known for doing well, why are you so bad at it?
The upside is, though, I really enjoyed this Owen Hart Shawn Michaels match. I thought it was really good.
I did too. Oh, it was funny. At this point, when Rick Rude was talking, Mr. Sandra came into the room and asked why he was dressed like an insurance salesman. Had no idea of any of the previous promos.
Oh, that just shows you that Rick Rude is so ahead of his time. Like, he knew what he was dressing for whoever needed to pay for a policy.
Yeah, exactly. So he is, you know, giving off the right aura of insurance sales. So I just thought that was really funny. And I was like, all of his promos have been about buying premiums and policies and stuff. And he was like, no way. And I was like, yeah, that's an actual thing.
But we got a really fun match with Sean and Owen. It was kind of one-on-one. Sean was doing less of the kind of DX stuff and more of the, right, okay, let's fight man-to-man and see who wins. These two are two of the best in the company, so when they get to go in there and have no shenanigans, it's going to be good.
Oh, it was excellent. I want more wrestling like this. Like, 1997 could use more wrestling like this because it was so good. I mean, Owen Hart came across as such a babyface in this match, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, he totally was. Like, he's doing three different storylines at once. So he was doing a babyface element here against Sean, babyface element against Nation.
The whole Austin thing, like, he's obviously the heel in the Austin thing. He's so very proud of his Owen 316 shirt, but he came across so well here, and I liked it. And JR on commentary at one point says, Sean's a bigger ass than Owen. It's like, yeah, I mean, accurate. And that does kind of take quite a bit, right? Because Owen is a smarmy dickhead who's like, hey, I broke Steve Austin's neck. Yay me.
Yay me. But the match keeps going on. Now, remember, this is champion versus champion, title for title. That's what right. this match is. So it stands to reason that when, Sean's trying to do Sweet Chin Music, he's tuning up the band, Owen ends up hitting Sean with an enziguri, and then Stone Cold comes out, jumps the guardrail, and it ends up that Owen gets a Stone Cold Stunner. The match ends up with like a...
He stunners the referee.
So he stunners Jack Doan first, doesn't he? He stunners Jack Doan, so then it means it's a no contest. Then Sean hits the Sweet Chin Music on Owen, but there's no ref. Bret Hart runs down, punches the crap out of Sean. DX runs down. It turns into a big schmoz, but officially, it's a no contest because Austin beat up the referee first, is what I'm led to believe.
I mean, I think that was what we were supposed to infer because, you know, Vince McMahon on commentary even is like, there's a DQ, but we don't really know who won, like if either team, because it seems like it's a no contest just because it all, you know, it just sort of all fell apart, right? Like DX pulls Sean out of the ring, the Hart Foundation comes down, like Sergeant Slaughter is there. And he just doesn't know what to do. He's just like, I'm clearly not going to be very effective in this situation. I don't even think the bell rings at any point.
No, it does. But I love the idea that Austin does not want anything to happen to that Intercontinental title. That is for him in the Survivor Series. He'll fuck up anything that gets in the road of that. And also, I wonder what you thought about this. I thought it was really a hot atmosphere when Bret and Sean started going at it. Like, finally.
Oh, it was.
Like, finally, people are like, oh, I want to see them fight. And they've done quite a good job in not allowing the two of them to get to each other. So when they actually finally were punching here and you know, getting into it, there was a good atmosphere, I thought.
It was. I mean, this is another instance. The hard cam started shaking because the crowd was so loud when Austin stunned the referee and all the chaos and everything. The crowd was super into it. And, I mean, yeah, I mean, this totally worked for me. And I like the logic of Austin stunnering the referee instead of either competitor. Because, I mean, obviously he knows that this is 1997. So if he stunners Owen, then there is a chance that the referee won't see it or won't notice or will forget the rules of wrestling and still allow the match to continue, right? He's familiar with 1997 referees. And if he stunners Sean, then he doesn't necessarily want to do that because then Sean wins the match and da-da-da-da. And I guess that would make a little more sense, but he didn't want Owen to have any sort of claim, but he also didn't want Owen to lose the IC belt. And it also kind of seemed like he also might not want Owen to win the European Championship either, because if Owen Hart faces him for the Intercontinental belt, but still has the European Championship to fall back on, then he can still say he's a champion. And Austin doesn't want Owen to have any gold because he wants Owen to, you know, give up his belt, but not have anything to fall back on because Owen's a dickhead and Austin doesn't like him.
It's good stuff. It's good story. So they're really building us towards Bret and Sean, Austin and Owen. It's good. Now, earlier on, the Jeff Jarrett promo apparently went like 8 minutes longer than it should have.
It was very long.
It was not supposed to be long. Hence, the Undertaker segment was completely cut, basically, which is fine because obviously Undertaker's not renowned for his talking, but like when he's in one of the top three feuds in the company, maybe Jeff Jarrett could have shut up so we could have actually got a little bit more time on this story. But basically, the gist of it is Undertaker's in the depths of the arena somewhere that's dark and purple. And he finally breaks the silence about Kane. He admits that Paul Bearer has, you know, put him in hell. And even though Kane has the demon inside him, Undertaker will never fight his own flesh and blood. He won't do it. And that's basically the gist of it. It was quite...
I mean, maybe it's a blessing that this was a shorter promo. Just because I feel like he got his point across without rambling as much as the Undertaker tends to do. Yeah. I like the story of it, right? Like, I saw the demon, but whatever you've poisoned his mind or told him of his older brother, it doesn't matter. I will never fight my own flesh and blood. I will never fight Kane. And it's like, you will, but it's really cute that you don't want to.
Because he shouldn't want to. He shouldn't want, you know, Paul Bearer has got involved and manipulated Kane and turned him against his brother. Ugh.
It's actually an epic story because, I mean, he thought his brother was dead until recently, and now his brother's alive, and he's like, he wants to reconnect with his brother, but his brother's been brainwashed and manipulated and all this stuff, but he's like, I don't want to fight you, I want to love you.
It's kind of beautiful.
It really is.
We are hyped for a match between Dude Love and the British Bulldog. Now, this is... I knew where all this was going, and I was excited that Sondra was going to think she was getting Dude Love, and that was going to segue us into something else that's very cool. So, we're supposed to get Dude Love versus the British Bulldog. First, we've seen of Mick Foley in a couple of weeks. He's been on Shotgun, for the most part, beating the Sultan. So, anyway, Dude Love comes out. He's ready to go, and then before we can get the Bulldog, the lights go out. It's Kane and Paul Bearer. They come down. Dude is not a man who's going to back down, so he punches back on Kane. You know, gives him a clothesline over the top. Of course, Kane lands on his feet. Dude Love gets a chair, tries to blast Kane with it. Kane completely no-sells the chair.
He hits a chair shot to the head. Like, he gives him a chair shot to the head, and Kane just no-sells it.
Like a champ.
Because he's Kane, and he's a monster, and he's awesome.
And then he choke slams Dude Love on the steel ramp twice, genuinely looking like he burst his cranium, and murders Dude Love.
Yeah, and I loved it. I really, really loved it. It's funny because when I thought that I was still getting Dude Love versus British Bulldog during Dude Love's entrance, I'm like, you know, I feel like Dude Love is everything I should theoretically enjoy because he's just a wacky character who dances around and is fun and a hippie and cool. And I just find myself rolling my eyes when Dude Love comes out. I don't like Dude Love as a character. He just doesn't work for me. And then as I'm writing this out, writing the sentence, I'm like, Kane! Kane! Kane is here! Oh my goodness! And I was so happy.
Welcome to how we felt in 1997 every single week.
I just love him. I just absolutely love him. And I love the progression, actually, of he started with, you know, the Hardy Boys, who will go on to prominence. But at this point, the Hardy Boys are just, you know, these young kid jobber people, right? Like, they're nothing. But he, you know, chucks them about and makes sure that they're basically dead and whatnot. And that's cool. Like, oh, okay, so Kane is beating up some no-name guys. That's cool. And then, what was it? The next one was, like, Flash Funk. So it's like, oh, okay, so he's going to, you know, on his path to the Undertaker, he's moving up a little bit because Flash Funk is of higher esteem than the Hardy Boys. And now it's like Dude Love. Dude Love is actually a pretty prominent character. I mean, Mick Foley is a pretty prominent person. And Dude Love, who was feuding with the Undertaker under a different name for quite a while, right, which is interesting. So I like that. The whole story is the progression of Kane wanting to make his way through the World Wrestling Federation to get to the Undertaker. And it feels like an actual progression, which I like.
And also the idea that, you know, Kane is filled with hatred. Who does he go after? The man that's filled with love.
It's perfect. So good. Vince says, hell hath no fury like Kane.
Kane's so good. My God.
I blame Retro Raw entirely for how excited I was for Kane versus Braun Strowman last night.
To be fair, Kane was so good last night.
He was, though, right?
His facial expression like when Braun Strowman came out the chairs, you were like, what?
Yes.
So good.
It was so good. Like, I really like Kane, and I always have, and I, you know, I will defend Kane. A lot of people are like, he shouldn't be wrestling anymore. He should go away. I mean, like, he is 50, but I'm so happy that he's back. And when we got some, I don't know. I just really, really like him.
Up next, we get the Raw debut of the Road Dogg and Badass Billy Gunn in blue. They've clearly not got their intro down yet, so they're still testing stuff out. They're going to face the Headbangers.
Mosh and Thrash, according to Vince.
Mosh and Thrash, because Vince can't remember their names. And at the end, you know, there's that, obviously there's the line we all know, you better call somebody, but instead he does, you better page somebody.
Which was so great. Well, he says something about calling somebody, like, I don't remember the exact line, but He said, and if you don't know, you better call somebody. And if you don't know that they're going for the tag team belts, or he says something about how they're going to go for the tag team belts. And if you don't know that, you better page somebody. And I was like, this is so 1997.
It is. And Billy Gunn's gear is just superb. It's so terrible. Now, Mosh and Thrasher decide to bring a boombox to the ring, which would kind of be their downfall, because as Thrasher is
Chekhov's boombox.
As Thrasher is in the ring, Billy Gunn just smashes him with his own boombox for the 1-2-3.
It explodes fantastically.
It does. My favorite bit is, like, I think it's JR in commentary. He's like, how can Mike Kiora not notice bits of boombox lying everywhere?
True. They are all over the ring. Like, there is no way that a boombox did not get hit or be thrown or something. Like, a boombox was clearly involved in the decision of this match. Like, it's really, really obvious. And, like, poor Thrasher's head is bleeding. And I'm just, like, I'm bummed because I know that the Headbangers are probably never going to rise to prominence again, just as I fall in love with them. Story
but
of
the
my
are, the are around, they are around for ages, so, you know, it's not on their away.
Well, that's, I mean, at least they're there, so that's good.
I also do want to say, I think it was during this match, I could be wrong, they're promoting that tomorrow night on the USA Network, we're going to have a flashback of Survivor Series. And they were like, you know, because this show, I think, was the night after, this was around the time that Roddy Piper and Hulk Hogan were feuding in WCW and about to have a cage match. And Vince is like, you know, you're not going to see Hulk Hogan trying to wrestle like today. You can see him in his prime against The Undertaker back in 1991. And you're like, I love that Vince is literally selling old Hogan matches on the basis that Hogan is bad now.
Yeah.
Genius.
Yep.
Genius. I'm all about it.
That's exactly what's going on. It made me laugh when they asked, like, oh, I wonder what the Honky Tonk Man is thinking now, like, because of the whole new pairing of Road Dogg and Billy Gunn. And I genuinely had forgotten that the Honky Tonk Man was involved in any of this. And he was involved in it for so long. And I was just like, that's how forgettable the Honky Tonk Man is to me. I also like JR asking at one point, he's like, what's all this pelvic stuff? Because... like, JR has the best questions. I would also like to know what's with all this pelvic stuff. Because, like, it seems kind of obvious at this point that Road Dogg and Billy Gunn will end up in DX, right? Because they're all, like, really all about their dicks, too.
It's a natural progression. But we're getting the beginning of the New Age Outlaws. So it's interesting to kind of see them, you know, really from the beginning, trying to see what they've got. So...
as soon as I heard ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, I was like, and so it begins. And I was genuinely mad because I saw Jesse James come out and I was like, ooh, do I get to hear the song? Fuck you. No, I don't get to hear the song. I want to hear the song because I'm still stuck on it.
It's such a great song.
It's really, really good.
So we momentarily get a quick clip of Bret Hart's going to be on Mad TV. And then we have Sonny. She comes out to show us that she has lovely breasts.
Yeah, and she does have lovely breasts, and her outfit shows them off quite nicely. She kicks off her shoes because she's just tired of them. She's like, my shoes are killing me. Ha, ha, ha. Look how funny and adorable I am. And she genuinely is. Like,
and people love
I understand.
Her.
People love her, and it makes absolute sense. She is gorgeous. It really is interesting, just the Sable versus Sunny sort of dichotomy, right? Like, Sable's in her leather cat suit and looking all, like, pushed up and in, and just, she looks very uncomfortable. And Sunny's just like, look, I'm fucking gorgeous, and I'm so much fun, and I'm kind of the girl next door, right? Like, Sunny is just, I do like Sunny in this era. Not so much in 2017, mind you.
Who does?
The change is remarkable, but...
We do see that Taka Michinoku has officially signed his contract with the World Wrestling Federation. We see footage of Vince and Bruce Pritchard and big smiles that, you know, he signed. We also are told that there is going to be a light heavyweight title tournament starting on the 3rd of November. So that's in 2 weeks. So we'll kick off the crusade to find a light heavyweight champion in the WWF.
So this is for a championship then?
Yep.
Okay.
The Light Heavyweight Championship.
I bet that division will be all sorts of interesting.
It will. So we got Taka taking on Tajiri, who is pronounced like, and I can't even, how did they pronounce him?
What, Tajiri Yoshihiko?
the graphic for him was not what it was the last time he was on.
No, it's well, they've taken, like, they're just calling him Tajiri now, but Sonny still announces him with both names, which was weird. And how is it that Sonny can come a lot closer to saying Taka Michinoku than any of the commentators? Like, it's not that no one is informed how to say his name. I mean, she does kind of say, like, Taka Michinoku or something, but it sounds close to Taka Michinoku, whereas you have Vince McMahon and JR still going, Taka Michinoku. It drives me insane. Like, does no one want to tell them, or are they just like, nope, we're right?
I mean, I'll be honest, the Tajiri one bothered me a little bit more this week, because I'm kind of used to the Taka one, but like, I'm pretty sure, and I was hoping that you'd have it written down, I'm pretty sure that what was written on the graphic, what Sonny said, and what Vince called them were all three different things.
Could very well be. I don't remember the Tajiri one.
One was like Tajiri Yoshihiro, one was Yoshihiro Tajiri, one, and there was another one. I'll figure it out for next week. But anyway, they have this, like, 3-minute match. It's fun, but it's so short that it can't really, you know, it doesn't really have time to do much. They just do a bunch of stuff. And in the end, Taka gets the Michinoku driver for the 1-2-3. I guess just another showcase that Taka is our guy.
Yeah, I mean, I wish we would get more of this, right? Because Tajiri versus Taka Michinoku is good. It's a good match. I wanted more of it instead of Jeff Jarrett banging on forever. Because I did notice at this point there were, like, 10 minutes left in the show. And we still, you know, had stuff to do. We still had a main event to do. I was like, I doubt they're going to have the light heavyweights in the main event, although they fucking should have, given what the main event was. But, it wasn't long enough to be anything. And that kind of bums me out, because I would like to see more good wrestling, and these guys are more than capable of it.
Well, we are going to get the light heavyweight title tournament, so your wish will be adhered to.
I mean, Lawler's just banging on about how Brian Christopher is going to win the whole thing and how he does everything better. Like, there was one point in the match where I think Tajiri does a springboard moonsault and Lawler's like, Brian Christopher does it better. No, he does not.
No, he doesn't. It's an actual fact.
Like, that's
doesn't.
Just factually untrue.
We do then cut to Jim Cornette for another Cornette's commentary where he's giving more crap to Phil Mushnick. He's reading out fan letters about people who hate Mushnick. So he's reading all these responses to him at TV Guide, and then, I'm not even kidding, Vince literally has a graphic on screen telling you where you can write to Phil Mushnick to tell him that he's an idiot.
They call it the Mad as Hell campaign. They've actually named this campaign to write angry letters to this guy who doesn't like wrestling. Doesn't this seem like overkill?
When I worked at somewhere else, I remember there was a thing where every week we would have this guy. I'm not going to say his name because I still don't believe he should have any publicity. There was a guy who hated all of the shows that were put on. Mm-hmm. And we'd be sitting in the meetings like talking about this guy, and I'm like, why do we care about this fat mark on Twitter who's got 20 followers who's star rating wrestling matches?
Look at your
audience. Are more people coming to the shows? Yes. Are more people talking about it? Yes. Are the reviews better? Yes. So why do you care about this guy?
It doesn't make sense. Like, I've always been one of those people, like, when people are super negative about something that I like, or when people are super negative about me, like, if it's criticism that I need to take to heart, then that's one thing. But if it's just like, no, you suck, or no, you know, your voice is horrible, or whatever, I'm always just kind of like, all right, cool. And I move on, and then I just sort of get over it. I mean, I realize that this Phil Mushnick guy apparently had a platform, and he was writing for, like, TV Guide, and...
I mean, yeah,
this guy's
writing for the New York Post and TV Guide, so I understand more why they're, like, annoyed with him, because he actually does have a big platform. But who cares? Just ignore
but
him.
I feel like... I mean, it's been two Jim Cornette segments now, last week and this week, and it's all about this Phil Mushnick guy. I mean, that's giving him a lot more publicity. I had no idea who this guy was back in 1997 or now. The only reason I know is because they've called him out on TV. I feel like they're sort of defeating themselves in giving him more publicity, right? Because, I mean, are they just trying to get him fired? Is that what they're trying to do?
I guess they're hoping that may happen.
I mean, all right, it's super vindictive. I don't know, it makes them just kind of seem like they're just whiny and overplaying it. And having a whole Mad as Hell campaign and graphic with an address of, like, where to write to this guy, it just seems like a bit much. But, you know, Vince McMahon.
Vince McMahon. Main event time, Sondra.
The fucking Godwins. Why?
I mean, they were the main event last week.
Didn't make it okay last week. Not okay this week.
Hey,
why
last week it gave us LOD as tag team champions.
Okay. Well, I mean, that was good, because they lost.
Now, what they did here for cheap heat was on their T-shirt, they spray-painted Texas Longhorns over Oklahoma Sooners. Do you think that that made you respect their craft anymore?
I did appreciate the attempt at trying to be, you know, dickheads to Oklahoma. And I was like, you know what? It's sort of clever that they did that, but seriously, fuck the Godwins.
And then the DOA came out in motorcycles.
So obviously I like that, because motorcycles.
And then it doesn't even really get started.
They had this recap that I think were they recapping the Godwins versus LOD last week? Like, they were recapping and having all these entrances, and like, it was taking a lot of time. There were only like 3 minutes left on the show, and most of the match was like video recap and video packages and stuff. I was like, is this going to be another Shotgun Saturday Night situation where we just don't see the match because we run out of time?
Yeah, and it doesn't even get started because the Truth Commission run out. Oh, God.
They're so terrible.
Is there any way to make it worse of having the Godwins in the main event? Yes. Let's have the Truth Commission interfere. So they come out. The Jackal has, like, the same color trousers, but, like, shorter. They're almost like a short. Bothers me tremendously. There's no explanation why he has little shorts as opposed to trousers. Still no explanation.
I guess that makes him more in authority of the Truth Commission or something.
Who is he?
I don't know. I don't know who the Jackal is. I don't know what his deal is. I want to, like, I want some explanation. Why is he here?
So then everybody comes out, Commissioner Slaughter, the agents, the referees, they're all trying to, like, break it up. I mean, it's ironic that this is all happening, and in a couple of weeks we have Survivor Series Gang Rules.
Wait, what?
Like they knew that this was going to be happening.
Gang Rules?
Yep, that's the name of Survivor Series.
Oh boy. Just oh boy is what I
rules
have to say
to spell
that.
Rules spell R-U-L-Z.
Of course it is. Of course it is. Oh, the 90s. But, I mean, basically here, Angry Interrogator is angry, right? Because they're like, look how big and angry he is. He's the Interrogator, and he's raging, and he's like frothing at the mouth, he seems, because he's so angry for, I don't know, reasons. Like, why is the Interrogator so angry? Is he trying to do this thing where he's like, look, I'm big and I'm going to just wreck everyone and be awesome? No, that's Kane's deal right now, sweetie. Like, just settle down. You're just the Interrogator. No one cares.
Yes, I can understand. I mean, I just don't care about it. Like, I just don't, I just have no desire to even enter into a discussion about it.
I don't know why it is that the Truth Commission is, like, just slightly more shit than the Godwins, that it pushes them into the so shit that I sort of adore them category. I think it's because they wore berets and, you know, had a promo about, I don't know. Like, I got introduced to them in a different way, maybe, and they don't ruin everything as much as the Godwins do, because the Godwins keep coming out and, like, being in the main event scene of the title picture. They keep going for championships, and I don't appreciate it.
So I'm not going to give you a choice in this, right?
Oh, great.
This is what I want to do next year at WrestleMania in New Orleans. I am determined to get Sondra into WrestleCon and have her in a photo with the Godwins. I want it so much. It'll be so good.
Can I make a face in the picture?
Of course you can. We all need this to happen, don't we? Come on. We all want to see Sondra with the Godwins.
I'm not paying for a picture with the Godwins. You're paying for a picture of me with the Godwins.
No, Patreon will be paying for that. Anyway, it'll be an exclusive Patreon picture.
Exclusive Patreon photo.
With a behind-the-scenes documentary of how it came to be. And you can pretend you're like a Make-A-Wish kid. You can bring your Truth Commission figures.
Yeah, I'm sure that I would totally pass for a Make-A-Wish kid.
But for the end of the show, we cut back to the boiler room with Mankind. Mankind is back. He's the master of madness, mayhem, malice, cruelty. And unlike The Undertaker, Mankind has no problem fighting his own flesh and blood. If his grandmother dropped him in his head, then the old bag would go down. Mankind's looking for a fight. Kane, have a nice day. Mankind is coming after Kane. This is the best.
I am so excited about this. I mean, the promo was sort of awkward in the sense that it was just tacked on at the end, right? Like, the pacing of this show was so strange. And I think having Bret Hart versus Farouk not in the main event and then, you know, having it just sort of randomly right away on the show just sort of upset the pacing of it. So I guess at least that feels authentic. Like, the main event wasn't really supposed to be the main event. But, I mean, it being tacked on and just sort of like, oh, and by the way, here's a Mankind promo felt a little jarring. But I am so into Mankind going after Kane, especially because he has motivation, because I kind of like Mankind standing up for Dude Love, kind of just the way like Cactus Jack sort of took the place of Dude Love and Mankind to defend them or whatever. I like the three faces of Foley, as we always call it today, right? I like them kind of interacting as characters and acknowledging one another. I think it's cool. I think it's really cool. It's exactly the sort of weird shit I love in wrestling, right? Because he has multiple personalities and they all talk and interact and are completely different. I think that's cool. But yeah, like Mankind versus Kane could be so, so good. And if it means like a story of Kane having to go through Mankind, and it sort of continues Kane's story, right? Like, if he has to have a proper feud before he can have a proper feud with The Undertaker, who doesn't want to face him, then what's Kane gonna do to Mankind to ensure that The Undertaker takes notice and, you know, eventually agrees to fight him? I'm into it. I'm super into it.
So overall, Sondra, where would your thumb be for this particular eventful, should we say? Eventful episode.
Very eventful.
Of Monday Night Raw.
Middling to up, I guess. Like, it was a quick watch for me. Like, normally Retro Raw takes me a while to watch because I pause and get bored and take breaks and that kind of stuff. And I was able to watch this quicker. I think it was intriguing. Like, from the standpoint of, did it intrigue me and was I sort of just fascinated by some of the goings on backstage, I would say it was a thumbs up, because it's like, oh, these are really interesting decisions. But the execution of it, like, Jeff Jarrett's promo wasn't very good and it was too long, right? And the Hart Foundation not getting to defend themselves against the racism, but like the chaos of it was fun. So it's kind of like middling to up. I don't know if it's like a firm thumbs up, but it was fine.
Yeah, I am... I'm gonna give it a thumbs up. I thought it was a noteworthy episode. I liked the Shawn and Owen match. I liked the Bret and Farouk chaos stuff, and the Kane and Dude Love Mankind stuff was really good. So yeah, I thought it was fun. Also, just kind of the card for Survivor Series, just to run it down for everybody, is going to be Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels for the WWF Championship, Owen Hart versus Steve Austin for the IC title, Mankind versus Kane, and a series of 8-man elimination matches, which are going to be Ken Shamrock, Ahmed Johnson, and the LOD against the Nation of Domination, the DOA versus the Truth Commission, oh dear lord, kill me now.
It's going to be so bad.
Vader, the Patriot, Goldust, and Mark Merrow will be teaming up to take on Davey Boy Smith, Jim Neville Neidhart, and the returning Doug Furness and Phil LaFon.
Furness and LaFon are coming back?
They will be at Survivor Series. And also, the Headbangers will team with the Blackjacks to take on the Godwins and the New Age Outlaws.
Why would that match have to happen?
Well, I mean, how many times have you asked for the Blackjacks to come back?
Zero times. Zero times is how many times I've asked for that, because no.
Also, at this point, Yokozuna is still scheduled to return. He was expected to return this coming weekend, but obviously he doesn't. Justin Credible, who's otherwise known as PJ Walker, was given his release this week to go and wrestle in ECW, where he would become Justin Credible.
Well, yeah, I forgot we had some Aldo Montoya early on in Retro Raw, didn't we?
We did. And there was some heat in Wichita this week as Shawn Michaels was advertised to be the referee in a triple threat match with Bret Hart, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and The Undertaker, but he no-showed the event. Some fans were asking for refunds, but because he wasn't advertised in a match, it's not a policy to refund on a referee.
And that's pretty shitty.
The last thing is, apparently there was talk in the WWF that they were going to try and bring in Japanese women for Survivor Series. They were going to try and do a match with Aja Kong and Kyoko Inoue. I probably butchered that surname, but anyway, there was supposed to be a match with them, but talks fell through, so it doesn't
happen. That's a bummer, because that probably would have been really good.
So there you go. That's all of our gossip for this week on Retro Raw. And at this point, Steve Austin was still doing run-ins on house shows, and he was, you know, he was told that he needs to rest because obviously he's come back to Survivor Series, and but he was still doing house shows and advertised and doing run-ins pretty much all the time. So,
I'm still stuck on this Shawn Michaels thing. Like, they're still like wanting to build the company around this guy, and he's no-showing events.
Yes.
They were so in a relationship.
Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can go to listen to David and I talk about TLC, Shawn Michaels interview up tomorrow, and then next week the Survivor Series marathon of podcasts will be going up there with Sondra and I. Tons of stuff to come. We've also got a new Yellow Ropes Forever that just went up where Sondra and I talked about the about Ember Moon qualifying for the NXT Women's match at TakeOver, and also about the Undisputed Era Insanity and their six-man tag, which resulted in a big chaotic thing at the end. So go to Patreon, listen for that.
Much I absolutely love Aleister Black and the Velveteen Dream, because they are my favorites.
They are your favorites. That is your favorite thing. Where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
So, thanks for listening, everybody. And to play us out, it feels only right that to play us out this week would be some music that we don't get. Because I think even though he was beaten up and he was massacred, we never really get to hear Mankind's victory music when he is a winner. So we're going to play Mankind's winner music before he tries to take on Kane. And we'll see how he gets on there.
I'm pretty excited. I don't think it's going to go well for him.
Nor do I. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.